Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining in today. We're talking about how to develop a healthy body image and why it's an important part of controlling your weight. Back with us, Dr. Shyla Merghain. She's a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And as always, she has some great advice for us about mindfulness and mindful eating. And we will be taking your general mental health questions as well as we move along. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. And I wanted to stress, just to begin the show, that we're talking about mindfulness for the first 45 minutes or so of the show. And then we're going to switch gears at around 11:45 and talk about weight loss drugs. But first, it's mindfulness, and I do hope you'll join in. Again, the number is 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Shyla, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me, Larry. This is such an important topic as we approach summer and beach weather and a great time to think about really strengthening that mind-body connection.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. Why is it so important when it comes to finding a healthy weight, that mind-body connection?
I think this time of year, there is such a focus on getting that beach body ready or getting those pounds off. And we know that there is so much pressure around us for both men and women, and especially women, that can make us really feel dissatisfied with our body image. I think it's really striking when we look at the data. One study reports that by age 13, 53% of American girls are unhappy with their bodies. And as girls mature and they reach 17, 78% of those girls feel unhappy with their body. And then if you look into adulthood, the statistics are staggering. We find 97% of women admit to having at least one "I hate my body" moment every day. And 80% of women show dissatisfaction with their body image. And, you know, some of the same findings are happening for men, and that's been on the rise, the dissatisfaction with body image. And, you know, as a psychologist, it's really concerning because we know that when people have that disconnect from mind and body, they feel that dissatisfaction. That is linked to a whole host of other things, such as people experience just poor quality of life, more distress, and it can put them at risk for unhealthy eating behaviors and eating disorders. So I'm so happy that we're going to talk about what are some ways that we can strengthen that connection to build better body image so we can really love what we see in the mirror each and every day.
Yeah, you know, I was to start the show, I mentioned the National Institutes of Health report that 40% of adults and 19% of children have obesity, which is a high number, but then it's way higher when you look at your figures, which are much higher in terms of people feeling like they aren't happy with their bodies.
Absolutely. You know, and if we look at what is propagating this, a lot can be just the culture we live in. We find some of the research shows that just by looking at media ads in a magazine or social media images, that it makes people feel worse about their own body. And I thought this finding was significant, that women receive nearly 5,000 negative body image ads per year, 5,000 negative body image ads per year. And so, you know, again, if we feel discontent with our body, if we're nitpicking what we see, it's going to lead to potentially that disordered eating, not taking care of ourselves. and just unhealthy eating behaviors. So we do find around taking care of your body and even a topic like weight loss, there tends to be one significant predictor of being successful with weight loss, and that is having self-compassion, which is simply just being kind to ourselves. So I think a great place to start is just really working on some of that acceptance and self-love and mindfully moving our body and eating foods that truly nourish us.
Is there a scientific description of body image? I mean, you know, kind of what are we talking about when we use that term?
Yeah, you know, there is. And, you know, because I think it can mean a lot to different kinds of people, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's a combination of you know, how we perceive our body. So those, how we perceive it, our thoughts, our attitudes, our behaviors. And it's really a multidimensional concept that, you know, we can think about the mental picture we form of our body as a whole. And it can include those physical characteristics of it, but also just how we feel, our energy level. And you know, how we take care of it. So again, we find that, you know, if we look at the mind-body connection, often where we need to start is in the mind of shifting that perception of your body instead of it being something maybe you're fighting against or you're criticizing. How do you befriend that body? So you're really taking care of it in the way that is sustainable and really nourishing.
And that good body image, I think you're saying, is it's important when it comes to finding a healthy weight.
Absolutely. Again, when we look at what really helps promote health and really eating well and moving our body well, we find at the core it's just how we're talking to ourselves, how we're treating ourselves. And again, when we look at weight loss, there are cultural considerations. There can be, you know, with especially in Western culture, this idea that thin is better. And looking at other cultures, there are, or even across time, there have been different standards of beauty. And so I'm always looking at, not that, you know, one size fits all, but what is health, you know, for you? What is a healthy weight? And that's going to look different for different genetics or body types and even, again, those cultural characteristics. So again, if we go back at the core, really looking at how do we treat ourselves? Are we making strong judgments of our body that make us feel less than or undeserving or unwilling or unworthy? And how can we instead be just more kind, more loving, more accepting, and then taking care of our body?
Yeah. Why do you think there's such a difference? I mean, you mentioned that a woman receives about 5,000 ads a year on that, you know, sort of reflect poorly on her own body image. But for men, it doesn't seem as, I don't know if it's as important or, I mean, why the difference, do you think?
Well, I think there are not as many ads for men, but we have seen an uptick in lower body satisfaction and even an increase in eating disorders around men. They tend to have, instead of being thin, more their messages around muscular, you know, strong. And that can certainly lead men to maybe, you know, overdoing it or being weekend warriors at the gym where they're putting in, you know, too many hours and at risk of hurting themselves. But I think, you know, there aren't as many messages. And I think also when we look at age, there are some gender differences that men tend not to be pummeled with so many images about aging and trying to look youthful. And instead, you know, there may be some strength of being older and perceived as more successful. So I think there isn't as many products sold to men.
Oh, sure.
Well.
Yeah.
So all of
that makes sense.
Be as triggering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do you know when you need to talk with a professional about body image issues?
That is such a great question. I think professional help can be useful in a couple different ways. If you find yourself really struggling with weight, it could be being underweight or not consuming enough calories in the day, or it could be when you realize I have some weight that I need to lose. Also, if we look at eating, if you're struggling with an eating disorder like binge eating disorder or restricting or overusing exercise to the point that it's not helpful. And then I think especially it can be useful to do some work with a professional if you find that your relationship with your body is contentious, that you don't feel at home within your own skin. You find, I know for many young people that I work with, they could really notice that, you know, they're constantly judging themselves, that they don't like to look in the mirror, or they're feeling really insecure when they're going out or at the beach or around other people because of their body size or shape. I think that also can be some cues that some professional intervention can be helpful.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned mirrors. When you're not happy with your body, people tend to, I think, avoid mirrors. But you say we shouldn't do that.
Absolutely. You know, I think it can be, when we think about strengthening this mind-body connection, using some mirror work can be very therapeutic. Seeing your own reflection. We do it with babies. You put a mirror in front of them and have that baby gaze at themselves so they get that sense of self. And sometimes in adulthood, and as we age, we can start avoiding looking in mirrors because of we're not happy with what we're seeing. So, you know, a nice practice might be to, let's say you're brushing your teeth in the morning in front of the mirror. Just simply notice where your eyes go and what thoughts arise. And you can use some mindfulness here. You know, you can notice some areas maybe that you like, something you like. Like it could be your fingers or your hair or your eyes or your collarbone. And you can just notice that. And then you can notice some areas maybe that produce some discontent or judgment or a distressing emotion. And think about acknowledging it, but then maybe reflecting, shifting that. And you could even do a loving kindness practice, like I accept you as you are, or I appreciate you for all that you allow me to do, or I'm grateful for you. And again, when we look at people who are really successful with losing weight and staying healthy, that self-compassion is at the core. And so I would say you can fake it to make it. It could feel a little cheesy, but even just practicing it starts to build and strengthen that core of compassion towards yourself. And again, that connection between mind and body.
Dr. Shyla Mergain, our guest today, a distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Our guest as we talk mental health, building a better relationship with your body and with the food you eat. I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts or maybe your own experiences on this. Number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today, our technical director, Jeff Robbins. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at mental health on the show today, your mental health, and maybe building a better relationship with your body with our guest today, Dr. Shyla Mergain, distinguished psychologist at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Again, questions, give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. then email to ideas@wpr.org. Melanie emailed to say she starts out with good intentions of eating right and exercising, and then life gets in the way. I can relate to that in some ways, too. Do you have suggestions for how to stay or get back on track?
Oh, Melanie, thanks for writing in. And I think you speak for a lot of people, right? We have these great intentions the night before we go to sleep for the next day or in the morning. And then life certainly gets in the way and it can get busy. And so I always think about just something small you can do. And we're always moving in the direction of our health. We're moving away or we're moving towards it. And so it could be, you know, figuring out how to just get a few more steps in. Or it could be this time of year, it's great to buy some new produce, fresh farmers market fruits and vegetables, and eating that, incorporating that in our day. And even just forgiving yourself for when you mess up, because it's going to happen. But I think it can feel so much more empowering and enlivening to focus on one thing that you can do, just one simple thing to get back on track.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back to the mirrors for a minute, because when you were describing that, I thought, yeah, it's a good way to think about your body and to look it over. But most of us don't spend more than, well, I shouldn't say most of us. I would probably not spend more than 10 seconds looking at myself while I'm brushing my teeth. Or when I'm dressed and ready to go to work, I'll take a quick look to make sure that I button my shirt correctly and everything else. But that only takes a few seconds. But you're actually talking about spending maybe a few minutes doing that.
That would be great. Even 10 seconds, Laura. I love, you know, even 10 seconds, you know, can make a difference. Yeah, and it might be, you know, 10 minutes might feel way too much, but it could be lingering for 30 seconds or even a minute of working your way up to that. And again, you're noticing, kind of noticing your body, sensing your body, and then maybe sharing some appreciation for it with some kind words. I think it can feel even helpful to think about, gosh, if I didn't have this, if I didn't have my sight, if I didn't have my hands, if I didn't have my stomach, you know, how life would be so much worse. And I think sometimes when we remember that, then it really generates some gratitude for our body and all it does for us. You know, and I think we're, again, connecting that head with the core of us. And even doing a mindfulness practice like a body scan during the day where we're really sensing, we're feeling that presence within our own skin. We can often walk around thinking like we're walking heads, so we forget we have this body attached to us. And a body scan where you're just scanning the body. So you might not be in the mirror. Maybe you're sitting down at a meeting, or even when you're taking a walk or you're lying down to go to sleep at night, just scanning the body and noticing the body part and the sensation of the body part. And you can do that same practice of offering some gratitude or even saying some words of kindness, like thank you for all you do, or I appreciate you, or even I sense you. And that can, again, just help us kind of reintegrate into our body. And instead of mindfulness, I often call that bodyfulness, that we're really centering and connecting with our body. When we go back to eating, you know, our body will give us cues around if we're hungry or full, if we enjoy a certain food, if that feels nourishing, or if it actually is kind of toxic for us, it isn't helpful for us. And I think a body scan can help us connect back to the wisdom of our body. And with that, then we make healthier food choices. And often, you know, can do movement, mindful movement, exercise can be more enjoyable.
You know, some problems, let's say alcohol or smoking, you know, that's one thing. We have an option to quit, but we don't have an option to quit eating. And this controlling how we eat is really difficult for a lot of people. And I think, and I can think of my own response, if I'm a little down in the dumps about something, I'll probably eat more. And then I'll kick myself later when I'm feeling better again. Most of the time I feel pretty good. I have a pretty good, have pretty good thoughts about myself, but I, that control issue can be a hard one.
Absolutely. And I think, again, that's where mindful eating can come in. And, you know, we don't have to be perfect. We may have those times where we pick those sweetened treats for a pick-me-up, but we're, as you said, looking to be fairly good in our nutrition. But there are some mindfulness practices that can help us really eat from that mind-body perspective. One of the ones I'm often recommending is just using some grounding strategies prior to and during eating. And that can look like when you set your plate to just stop and do a couple mindful breaths prior to eating. And using that five senses, so you're breathing and you might notice the color of the food, the texture of the food, the smell of the food, any sounds that the food makes as you're chewing it, and the taste, really savoring the taste. And so taking a few breaths prior to eating just allows you not to be in that autopilot, just shoving the food in, but really savoring. Another practice is just to slow down your pace. So it takes around 20 minutes from our first bite to when we actually feel full. But most of us, you know, shovel the food in or we're eating on the go. And that often can lead to eating more and not feeling as satiated. So you might set a timer and have that 20 minutes. So you might even intentionally put your fork or spoon down and take a pause in the midst of the meal and then resume. And we find that, you know, slowing down the pace, some of that mindful grounding practices even improves digestion, and we end up feeling full and satisfied. And one last one that I have started to use is to use a smaller plate. So if our food takes up like 70% of our plate, we actually feel more satisfied when we're done eating. And so having a smaller plate can actually help us reduce portion size, because we're having less food, but it looks like it's filling up that plate. So I personally have been using that one. So we feel a little, again, more satisfied with a smaller amount.
Dr. Shyla Morgain, our guest today, and we'll take some calls. You can join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234. Or if you'd like, you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Linda in Milwaukee. Linda, thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Larry, and thank your guest as well. I'm calling with a question about body image, and it doesn't have to do with weight, but it has to do with spider veins on my legs, and it's a genetic predisposition. But I'm 73 years old, and it has caused me a great deal of psychological distress, and I'm finally working with a psychotherapist who is using cognitive behavioral therapy and exposure response prevention. But I'd like some thoughts from your guest as well. And I'll hang up and take your call online if that's appropriate.
Sure. Thanks, Linda, for calling. Appreciate it. Dr. Shyla Morgain, what do you think?
Oh, Linda, thank you so much for calling and sharing. And I think so many listeners can relate to that. Having something that, quote unquote, is unwanted for you with spider veins. For other folks, it might be cellulite or your nose being crooked or your earlobe, I don't know, has something. And, you know, and I think what you really highlighted is that can stop us maybe from going out or wearing certain clothes or just not feeling at home in our body. And I really appreciated you sharing that you've sought professional help, which can be so, so helpful. And so I think a couple things that you bring up, you know, one is the kind of the thoughts we think about that body part. And again, we can get so critical right? We can have these negative words towards ourselves. And I think from a cognitive behavioral perspective, CBT perspective that you mentioned, it's really trying to focus on the function of our body, not its shape. So what our body is able to do, like, you know, in your case, Linda, your legs can move. They can get you from place to place. They've allowed you to travel to so many places and do so many things. And there might be gratitude, again, for that function of the function, not the shape or not the form. So the veins are, you know, extra kind of more the cosmetic, but they haven't necessarily stopped you. So I think, again, when we think about trying to reframe, shifting that mindset to a healthier mindset with our body, we're really trying to highlight all the things our body does for us, how it performs for us, how it hasn't betrayed us or turned away from us, how it shows up every day ready for us despite what we say or do to it. When we think about that, it's pretty profound, right? And in that, I think, can be maybe just some settling and some appreciation and gratitude, and then allows us to move forward in more of a whole, holistic way where we feel really more proud of our body and all that it's doing.
Yeah. We get another emailer wonders about living alone and eating. It's harder for him to, prepare a balanced meal, or the role, I guess, is, all right, here's something easy, I'll just stuff that in.
Yeah, that can be a real challenge for a variety of reasons. So thank you for commenting on that. You know, if you're just preparing a meal for one, you can have a lot of leftovers. Or I think on the opposite, you can feel like, why bother? I'm just going to eat something on the go, something quick and easy that isn't necessarily nutritious. So it can be a great goal to work on, trying to pick some maybe easy, healthy recipes. I know a lot of people will freeze the leftovers so that they can eat down the road, or even people can get together with their friends and invite them over for a meal and do kind of a swap. They cook one week, you cook the other, and you send each other home with some leftovers. And I think, again, just starting small. And there can, again, just be organizations out there. You know, even medical centers have nutritionists to work with. That could also provide some ideas. But the cooking for one, there are probably even some websites out there of easy, healthy recipes for one that you can do.
I have a friend who is a single guy, and he has taken to taking photos of what he prepares for his dinner and then posting it up on Facebook. And he gets a lot of likes, and I think it's almost for him. I haven't talked to him about this, but I'm thinking about this right now. It just gives him some impetus for making a nice, well-balanced meal for one person.
I love that. It's almost become a hobby, and there's some creativity with that. And I think that's really inspirational, because if you can make cooking fun, maybe something that you're sharing with somebody, maybe looking to sources of inspiration, and there are fun cooking classes out there where you might even meet some people. But I think it's sometimes we just get stuck in a rut and we're doing the same thing. So it's a great time to just mix things up and, again, choosing food that will really nourish you.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think he is. He may be doing this, Mark, may be doing this as he's kind of sharing his food with people, with his friends.
Absolutely, right? And maybe inspiring them to make a similar kind of meal.
Somebody else just posted, my father-in-law sends pictures of his meals to my wife so she knows he's eating okay. He's a widower.
That's cool. great, right? And you could even do that to say, hey, look at what I made, you know. I'm fueling my body in a good way.
Well, you're not a nutritionist, but does a bad diet affect your mental health? Is it a kind of a catch-22? Can eating poorly, not getting through exercise make it harder to get healthier?
Yes, I mean, definitely. You know, we know that food is medicine, and we know that certain foods can impact our brain health. We know our stomach has more neurotransmitters than our brain does, so certain foods can, like diets high in refined sugar, are harmful to the brain. And certain foods can cause more inflammation and again, can also lead to worsening of mood symptoms such as depression. So there is some truth to food is medicine and how we're fueling not only our body, but our brain. And with that, ultimately our mood. So we can think about it as like driving a car that needs high octane fuel, and we aren't putting that in the car, it's going to over time not work as well. So in the same way, eating foods, high quality foods that contain lots of vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, nourish the brain and help protect it from certain kinds of stress that the body produces. Not a nutritionist, but it can be so helpful to think about maybe working with somebody or even looking online. There's some great ways of eating like a Mediterranean diet that has shown to reduce the risk of depression when somebody's eating that kind of diet that has a lot of fruits, vegetables, unprocessed grain, fish, and seafood. On only a modest amount of lean meats and dairy, that again has been shown to reduce the risk of depression along with other health benefits.
And I'm wondering what advice you have for, let's say, friends and family who think someone they love needs help. That's
that
a hard
a,
one.
Great. Yeah. Well, I think a couple things. I think it's really important for parents not to model for their child negative comments about other people's bodies. Instead, I think parents can really model healthy body image in their children by speaking positively about their own body and focusing on the child's how their body is moving and functioning versus the form. But at a certain point, you might have a child or a loved one where you're really concerned about their weight. You're maybe concerned about their eating behavior. Maybe they're restricting. Maybe you see them self-harming. Maybe you see them so down on themselves, they're socially isolating. And I just recommend going in and taking a time to talk with them and just expressing care and concern, and then maybe encouraging them, and you might even support them in that, to reach out for professional help. Could be even just talking to their physician at their next appointment or calling a behavioral health specialist and setting yourself up with a counselor who specializes in eating and body image and even weight loss. And certainly there are a lot of experts out there on even people treating eating disorders as well.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Shyla. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I appreciate it, and we'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Dr. Shyla Mergane, distinguished psychologist in the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, our guest. Coming up, we're going to take a look at drugs that we can use for weight loss. That's next. I'm Larry Mueller for Wisconsin Public Radio.